Well, Mick, 5 years with Limerick, you're after hanging up your whistle. Was it a difficult decision?
Yes, Michi, it was a difficult decision because, you know, when you're with a group of players and management and county board officials for 5 years, you become very attached and very friendly. And, you know, a lot of your life is tied up around it. So it does leave a void. It was a difficult decision, but the management and I, we met. Each year we felt we had made progress, and beginning of every year we'd say, look, can we bring them to the next level next year? This year we felt that you have to refresh the whole set system every year, and we felt that we'd given it everything, and to bring them to the next level they needed a new voice. Because, you know, there's only so many years you can reinvent the wheel. And it was a long journey to Limerick, 3 or 4 times a week. And it was a big commitment. And we felt the players now had got to a very high level and they needed a new voice just to knock them over the edge, you know.
Now, you're saying rightly so, a long journey to Limerick. How did you take the 5 years mentally and physically in the travelling, leaving home, the training, the pressure of the big games, getting fellas organised, dealing with the county board? Mentally and physically, how was Mickey Ned?
Well, I never regarded it as pressure. I enjoyed it. It was probably the most satisfying 5 years of my life involved in sport. I look forward to every evening, and there was no pressure, because pressure is something you put on yourself. When you enjoy it, when you know you're making progress, it's a labour of love. Working with the county board, you know you have your ups and downs, but we respected each other. They had patience. They knew what we were all about. The county board, the players, the management team and the clubs, we were all singing out of the one hymn sheet, and we knew what we wanted to achieve. So it was a labour of love.
Did your wife and family have an input into your decision?
Naturally. I mean, my wife has a big bearing on it. I mean, if she's not willing to sacrifice, I couldn't be involved. And she was very understanding and accepted whatever decision I made. She would give me 100% support, and did for the 5 years.
It's a thing, Mick, we're inclined to forget at times. Your wife and the likes of which Seb Jack O'Connor's wife and Mick Dwyer's wife, Liam Kearns's wife, John Kennedy's wife and Paddy Shea's wife, all the rest of those people that train Kerry teams, they couldn't do it without the women of the house really being behind them 100%.
Well, you see, they have to carry the can while you're away. And without their commitment and support, there's no way you could be able to do it.
Now, you can correct me as I go along, Mick. You had a great 5 years with Limerick. In my estimation, I think in your 10 championship defeats, you only lost one game by 4 points. The rest of them were under 4 points. The rest of them were by a point and by extra time. You had a lot of heartbreak.
Well, that's part and parcel. You probably make your own luck. We were a bit unfortunate in some of decisions, maybe, but I'm not blaming any decisions. We were a bit unlucky. We didn't get over the line, but we were unfortunate that while we were there, it was Cork and Kerry were in Munster, going probably better than they had ever gone. And that's what we were up. I've no doubt about it. Had we been in some of the other provinces, we would have got a couple of provincial titles. Because the lads, I must say that I was very fortunate. I had probably the most disciplined, committed, focused, honest group of players you could ever ask for. And they gave everything. And they boxed above their weight year in, year out. And that was the satisfying thing is, you don't look focus on the heartbreaks. You focus on the progress and the satisfaction. These lads played football because they love football. They didn't get involved in Limerick football because they'd be high profile. because they wouldn't be. And they played football because they loved it. And that was the beauty. You were involved with people that were totally committed and disciplined. In fact, this year, for the first time ever, there was a competition for the most disciplined team in the National League. And they won it. They got €10,000 from the Croke Park for the county board. But they were incredibly disciplined group of lads. And it was just a pleasure and an honour and a privilege to work with them. And that's why it was difficult pulling back, because they wanted us to stay on. And we felt long-term in the interest of the team that they needed new approach.
Now, of course, you've been very diplomatic. You're a diplomatic man, as most managers are, but you're not a manager anymore now. And I don't have to be diplomatic. But in my view, talking as an ex-referee who has refereed against so-called weaker counties, and I know what goes through referees' heads, referees, in my opinion, are inclined not to give the break to the so-called weaker counties, and I include myself in that. This year, in my estimation, John Gallivan was fouled. He should have got a penalty. Last year or the year before, Cock got a penalty they shouldn't have got. I saw Stephen Lucy being pulled for kicking a point against, maybe it was Meath or somebody, when to equalise it, and he shouldn't have been. Tomás O'Shea should have been sent off against Limerick. And going back over the 4 or 5 years, there were those incidences. Now, that's to me, Mickey, that to me now aren't all coincidences.
Naturally, I agree 100% with you, but I don't want to be focusing on this persecution complex. But I would say that it was one of the disappointing aspects of my involvement was that we created the most disciplined team in the country. And yet the people who were imposing the discipline during the game didn't, in my opinion, give us fair play. We spent the whole winter and all the spring imposing discipline on the players, and it's a letdown for the players to be let down by the person who is imposing the discipline. That was probably the only downside of the 5 years.
Staying with that, Mick, do you agree or disagree with me when I say that referees generally are not inclined to give a break to the so-called weaker counties, that it's a mental thing by them?
I don't know, Wiggy, but what is said, that they err on the side of the successful team because down the line they'll be involved in the All-Ireland semi-finals and ultimately they'll have a better chance of getting games in the closing stages of the championship in high-profile games. Now, I don't know whether the facts bear out that, but that is the trend.
Now, in your 5 years, you had to build and rebuild at Limerick. You were involved, of course, you had dual players. It isn't easy in a dual county. You had to build and rebuild, and you still kept coming back. And as I said, out of your 10 championship games, You should have gone further. There was only those 1 or 2 points. How difficult was it to rebuild the team? And is there a lot of young footballers in Limerick? And what's the situation there that you're leaving? I presume it's very good.
Now, just to go back, you mentioned dual players first. Limerick is probably the most unique county in the country. There's an ethos out there. They play every sport. They play rugby. Now, rugby would be number one. Hurling would be number two, soccer would be number three, basketball and Gaelic would probably be close fourth. Now, all these players tend to play all these sports over the winter. Now, that is difficult. And then you have the dual players, you have dual players with rugby, you have dual players with basketball. You know, it's not the ideal situation, but you had to put up with it because that was the ethos in Limerick. Regarding you, the other question you said, bouncing back, players naturally bounce back. They know that they're close to it. They're playing good football and it's only a matter of time before they break through. Regarding the legacy, I think that, you know, we have left, the management have left Limerick football in a very much stronger position than we had inherited it. We inherited an older team that had great success under Liam Cairns, but they had come to the end of their tether, as they say. Now, I stood, you know, a lot of them retired when I took over. In fact, about 20 of them of the 30 would have retired over an 18-month period or prior to I accepting the job and the first year. And then so we had really had to set about bringing in new players. Now, it's difficult to bring in new players when you haven't won a minor or an under-21 match in 10 years. And so the conveyor belt isn't as strong as it would be in Kerry or in the strong counties. But we were fortunate. We picked up young players here and there, and the average age now of the forwards would be 22 or 21 or 22. So that's a very strong position, and they're good footballers, and they will grow in confidence, and they grew in confidence, and they play good football.
The few times that you met Kerry in the Championship and you reign as Limerick, naturally enough, all that goes aside and you're a Limerick man on the day. But underneath it all and in the back of your mind and deep in your heart, did it affect you any little way at all? Did you say to yourself, God, after I given all my time for Kerry, here I am? Or was it just water like the off of the duck's back?
We were fortunate that we only played Kerry twice. We played them in the league in Killarney about 3 years ago, and we played them in the Munster final this year. It was difficult playing Kerry. We had no problem getting up for Cork. We played Cork in the Championship every year, and we loved it, because playing Cork, I suppose, to a Kerry man is like a red rag to a bull. But playing Kerry, because Donnie Buckley, who was my coach, and we worked very close together, and he would be an out-and-out Kerry man as well. And it was difficult, and there's no bones about it. But what you had to do is you had a job, you had an obligation to the players, you shut it out of your mind that was Kerry. And you probably imagine it was Cork. And you had to approach the game that way.
Now, there's one Limerick man I must talk to you about. I had the great honour and privilege of having John Gallivan on Terrace Talk for an hour there just some few weeks ago. A man that I have tremendous admiration for, one of the great midfielders and a gentleman of the highest quality. He must have been a born leader, played a lot of basketball with Kerry teams and everything, but he must have meant so much to you. And I would say that he'd probably get on any team in Ireland in midfield.
I have, like yourself, Vishy, I have incredible admiration and respect after working with John for 5 years. He is a born leader. He's mentally teak tough. He's mentally strong and physically strong. He is the spiritual leader of the team. You pick John Gallivan, you pick the rest of the team around him. Whether it is playing Kilkenny above in Kilkenny in the Division 4 or playing in a Munster final against Kerry, he will give it everything. He's the leader on and off the field, and he has maintained such a high standard for the last 12 years. And you could say wasting his sweetness in the desert air, because people don't know how good a footballer he was. It was a privilege for me to work with him, and I think he's one of the finest players I have ever come across.
You know. On a hypothetical question, what would he have meant if he had been a Kerry man?
A very interesting. I was talking to Jimmy Deanahan during the summer, and he says to me, tell John Gallivan if he had transferred to Finnoog, he'd have now 6 or 7 All-Ireland medals. Which I did. And John told me he was approached when he was 18. And he was entitled, because they would have landed in Finnoog and they would have landed in Croom. And he said, look, I'll have to play with the lads I grew up with. And he probably knew. Could you imagine if he was midfield with Darragh O'Shea for the past 12 years?
But it, once again, it only showed the character of the men, that he had no compunction at all only playing with the men. Mickey, you played with Kerry from 1971 to 1978. You scored 417 in 17 games for Kerry. And when you finished up then, you were one of the bravest men that I knew to come along and take over training Kerry. There was no managers then. You trained Kerry when Mick Dwyer packed up. There was the great Kerry team. Looking back at that now, was it a wrong decision for you, such a young man, to come in at that time and take on the rebuilding of the whole Kerry team, which had fallen asunder?
Prior to that, I had the privilege of being a selector for 4 years, from 84 to 87, with Mick O'Dwyer. And during that period, Kerry won 3 All-Irelands. So I had worked with the man himself. I'd seen how it was done, and I had the probably background of having studied physical education, and that's an added help in a team preparation. Now, when Mick called it a day, I knew there was nothing there. It was suggested I put in my name. I knew that there'd be no All-Irelands. I knew that patience wasn't one of the greatest characteristics of Kerry supporters. And I knew, I was perfectly aware that there was nothing coming through in the conveyor belt. And I went into it with my eyes open. I knew exactly that if I'd survived 3 years, I'd be doing well. But I knew there'd be no All-Irelands in 3 years. But I asked the county board, would they give me the under-21s as well as the seniors, which they did, and I ended up with 18 or 19 under-21s on the senior panel. We won the All-Ireland under-21 that year. It was difficult training because you had to train 6 nights a week. You had to take the under-21s separately, and we got to 2 All-Irelands and an All-Ireland semi-final. That was the basis of the 97 team going forward. You had the Maurice Fitzgeralds, Noel O'Mahony's, Peter O'Leary, Liam Flaherty, Eamon Breen, Pat Laid, all that age group that you had to build. We knew they were young. We knew we wouldn't win All-Irelands senior, but we had to start somewhere and somebody had to take the slack. So I had no problem. I felt it was setting down a foundation. And when I left, it was still another 5 years after before these lads came to maturity. So you asked me, was it the right decision? I felt for me it was the right decision at the time.
If you were approached sometime, if the position of manager was vacant, if it was, I'm saying if, or down the line 4 or 5 years' time, would you like to come back and manage Kerry?
If I had the energy at the time, I would love to. Because everyone in Kerry would love to manage the Kerry team if they felt they had the ability to do so. I hope that if it ever comes up in the foreseeable future, I would love to give it a lash.
Well, you certainly have the CV anyway coming in this time more than the last time, and that's not being disrespectful to you. Going back to when you took over the Kerry team and now, Mick, there's a huge change in. You were a trainer then, you weren't a manager, correct me if I'm wrong, the word manager hadn't come in then, you were the trainer of the Kerry team. Everything has changed. What's up the big changes now? You're around so long, you seem to be there forever.
I know that when I took over from Mick O'Dwyer, I was known as a trainer, but you had to physically train the team. You had to do everything. Mm-hmm. I even washed the jerseys. I did every single thing.
Now, interrupting you, one of the longest memories I have of you was running out onto the field at 7 o'clock or 6:30, putting down the cones. And you were one of the first managers, trainers in Kerry to use cones.
Well, no. you literally had to do everything you see, that time you had to be jack of all trades and you were probably master of none. Now the whole concept of management has changed totally. You can manage the team now. You have that time you trained, you coached, you managed, you did the stats, you did everything. And now you have a specialist for every job.
And probably picked the jerseys up off the ground inside in the dressing room after matches.
Yes. And you have people that your job now is to empower each person, the coach. You set the standards. You set out what you want to collectively with the management team. And you make them accountable. You get everybody singing off the same hymn sheet. And everybody from the medical back, I would regard everybody that's involved outside of the team as the management. And I would bring them all, empower them all, because you're as strong as your weakest link. And you empower them, give them, but make them accountable and make them part. You see, you have the medical back, you have physios, you have doctor, you have masseur, you have a video guy, you have
stats,
yes, and you have somebody in charge of the head, the mind, and you have selectors, and you have coach, you have trainer, and so, and of course you have somebody in charge of equipment, and he has to organise everything, and then you have a liaison man with the county board, and then you have the officers of the county board you have to keep on board. It's very important that the manager is only a cog in the wheel, and that the county board, without the county board, you have no football. And without the players, you have no football. Without the manager and structure, you could have football. But you need the backup of the clubs. So it's a big jigsaw, and everybody is vital cog in the jigsaw. And the manager is only one small cog. The management structure is very important, but there's a lot more people involved, and everybody must cooperate because there's a whole package.
So the change since you were there, what year did you take over, Kerry Mick? First, after
Mick Dwyer? 89.
So the change since 89 up until now is absolutely dramatic.
It is dramatic in terms of, but it's much more challenging and much more rewarding now than it was then. Yeah. And the game itself has changed as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the game now. We're going to come to that next. Now, the game itself, of course, has changed. It's all swarming now. It's crowding. It's a case of going out and stop the other team from playing football. Now, I don't know what your philosophy is. You can talk about that yourself. And it's a case of studying videos and a case of, it's the whole thing. So it is not semi-professional, but professional. So the big change from your time playing, from your time taking over Kerry to now, the whole thing has changed completely. Rules and all have changed, of course.
But I know that when I took over Limerick 5 years ago, I was not long in the game when I found out I was away off it, that the game had passed me by, and that I had to take a serious look at the game. I know my first year I was there, I was naive. We went out 15 against 15. As some way, I am amused when I would appreciate this, when I hear some of the analysis saying, why don't they play good, honest to God, open football? I'm telling you, a team that plays that now will be wiped out. And it's naive football. I found after maybe a year or two that if I didn't create depth in defence, close down the space, for a team like Limerick, if we went out playing Kerry in a 1v1 situation, we'd be wiped off the field.
So the old saying, Mick, is very true here. If you can't beat them, join them.
Yes. And you know, you must be realistic. You must close down the scoring opportunities for the opposition. You must close down the space. And you must create space for yourself up front. It's a simple game. But it's changing, it's evolving, and if you don't do that, you'll be destroyed.
What was the toughest team that you met? What was the team that gave you the most trouble to break down? And talk to me about the various championship games that you played and the different styles of the different counties.
Well, I suppose if you take Cork now, Cork, don't worry about the opposition. They play their own game, which can be a little bit naive. Kerry have so much talent if they get the ball up front that you just have to, number one, you have to cut off the supply to them and you need to close down the space. Now, Kerry wouldn't be as tight now in defence as we'll say, some of the Northern teams. Maybe that's an area they need to work on. But each team has its own personality. It has its own character. And you just have to look at it, see what their strengths are, and see what their weaknesses, try and exploit their weaknesses and counteract their strengths. That's basically it. And every game is different. And every team is different. And a lot of teams tend to reflect the personality of their management. So it's a complex thing, and it isn't as easy as you know, stereotyping a county team and say, this is the way they play, this is the way. It varies, and it varies from game to game.
What was your most satisfying win with Limerick, and what was your most galling loss with them?
I suppose the most satisfying win was against Meath. Was it 2 years ago in the...
You hammered them, is that right?
Yes. It was against Meath in the backdoor system. And at one stage, you know, it was just that we were on song on the day. And it was when everything came right. And at one stage, and we were 20 points up against Meath. And Meath were, you know, we have great respect in Kerry for Meath. And I remember turning to Donny Buckley and saying, this isn't really happening, you know. But that's when everything clicks. Most frustrating one would be probably the Munster final last year in 0-9 against Cork, when I felt we played well enough to win it well, but maybe due to lack of experience and confidence, we left it slip.
Probably, Mick, correct me if I'm wrong, that one breakthrough, if it had come, if he had won,
yeah,
if he had got to Croke Park for an All-Ireland semi-final, or if he had won one Munster championship, that might have been the step that would have given you the experience.
Yes.
And the confidence to take more steps.
That's, you need just one break. But they say you make your own breaks. We didn't make the breaks. And that's probably unfortunate. And
now, you mentioned Donny Buckley there now, the Castle Island man. Lot of talk about the man. What did he bring to the table, Joe? What has he?
Well, Donny is an engineer by profession, and he has a great engineering mind. And he brings a great knowledge of the game. He has a great intensity to his approach, and we gelled very well as a partnership. And he has a great knowledge of coaching and made a great contribution to us. And I had great respect for him as a person. And I think that's the most important thing. Once you have respect for the people you work with, it gels very well. So he made a great contribution to Limerick football.
Outside of Kerry now, Mick, if you had a choice in the morning of managing an inter-county team outside of Kerry, we're just playing fantasy
this
stuff now.
Hypothetical.
We're just playing fantasy stuff now.
Cork. I think they're... Oh, I think we could bring him to another level.
Now, we still don't know who Cork are going to meet in the final. This interview is done beforehand. What's your fancy for the two teams in the final, and who do you fancy is going to win it?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I find it very difficult to know, because Down bring great freshness and flair. And I've been very impressed all year by Kildare. They had a bit of a hiccup against Loud, but subsequently they have built. They're physically strong. They're scoring they're scoring points. They don't allow the opposition with an awful lot. They close down. They work hard. They'll be hard to beat. But there is a danger that the down flare, you know, in Croke Park could take them, you know. But all the year, I had, the beginning of the year, I'd gone for Cork from the very beginning. They haven't played up to the standard they're capable of playing. Last year, they coasted through the whole year and flopped against Kerry in the All-Ireland final. I think this year, they're probably in a better position for the final because the management can work with them and talk to them. They haven't played to their potential all year in any game. Mm-hmm. So I think there could be a good game in them.
Yeah. Right, you're going for Cork. Many people will. Another aspect of the game is the continuing changing rules. You were there for the 5 years with Limerick and the hand pass was changed and there was picking off the ground and there was marking and there was various things. The rules are changing continuously. What are your views on the hand pass? What are your views on the interpretation by referees? And what are your views on are the referees all in the one word?
Before we even answer that, Vijay, I feel that the first thing they must decide, in my opinion, they must decide what kind of a game they want. And
sorry, who are they now?
Right. I think that the people who are doing it, Croke Park have a habit of picking 8 or 9 people at random. Maybe it isn't at random. But what I would do is I would get players' representatives, coaches, managers, referees, officers. I would bring people from every aspect of the GA together. But I would also decide, bring in sports scientists and say, what is required as a spectacle for our team game? What kind of a game do we need? We need a game that has very few stoppages. We need a game that has high catching, good points, good skill, bring out the best of the game. Then we say, we define the game we want, then we define the rules that will get this game. This has never been done. What has been out there has been a fragmented approach to, we'll get rid of this because it hits the media and we say, we don't want this or we don't want that. If we can get a game that is free-flowing, showing all the great skills of our game, and look at other team sports that have major spectator appeal, what is it that makes it so attractive? How do we get that in the day? What kind of a game will make... What are the great things about the GA or Gaelic football? How do we achieve that through the rules? I think we've gone the other way. We have put the cart before the horse. Now, if we look, put the horse first and decide the spectacle we want, then we'll bring the cart. What are the rules that will achieve that? Go about it. Bring in sports scientists that could devise rules. Forget about emotion. Totally clinical, analytical. We could bring the greatest team sport in the world. But we've got to look at it from outside the box.
There's only a small little bit of tweaking would bring that in.
Yes. We're tweaking the wrong things in the wrong way, in the wrong order, because there's pressure from the media to change.
In your estimation, as a man standing on the line for hundreds of games with Limerick and with Kerry and with other counties, would you think since the yellow and red cards came in that the yellow card has been abused, that there are yellow cards being dished out now for things that really aren't yellow cards? Right? Correct me if I'm right or wrong.
Well, that's the only conclusion. I watched Match of the Day in soccer the other night. You have to do something serious in soccer to merit a yellow card. We see yellow cards. A guy goes in a good shoulder. There's a yellow card. There are things now that are against the spirit of the game. And that has got to be respected, the spirit of the game. It's a physical contact sport.
How frustrated were you on the line when you saw these things happening, your players, or maybe other players in other countries,
yes,
for that matter?
You do, because if you have a good training session, there's a serious physical contact to it. If you go up to, say, Kilkenny training session, maybe they hear talk a lot about it. There's obviously a lot of physical contact in these training sessions. They get used to that. And that's part and parcel of the game, as long as it isn't dirty. The physical contact, and we must be able to define it. I mean, rugby now is in a much stronger position. It's very clinical in its definition of its rules. There are very few grey areas. We have too many grey areas that are open to interpretation. And it's like beauty, it's in the eye of the beholder. And it's too subjective. It isn't objective enough. And it becomes very frustrating for spectators, for players, and for managers. So I think this is the serious area that has got to be addressed. But it must be addressed with referees, with managers, players, spectators, and everybody that has a vested interest in the game should come together, come up with the ideal game.
Do you think, Mick, that Kerry are at the end of a great spell? Do you think that they're going to be down for a while? And when I say down, I mean by not winning in All-Ireland. How long do you think now that they're going to take to rebuild? Or will they fall behind the rest of the counties now that are left in the Championship and that have gone ahead of them?
I think Kerry have what nobody else has, no other county have. They would have four serious forwards. Colm Cooper, Donaghy, Declan and Paul Gallivan. Now, you'll get backs most places. If they'll sort out midfield. You see, we were talking about 89 early on. 89 was a situation where there was nothing left because everything had been neglected for 12 or 13 years underage. And there was no lightning in the tunnel for any young player because the panel was there, they were winning All-Irelands, and why change? Now, it's different this time. Because you have four class, relatively young forwards, best in the country. Once you have forwards, you'll win All-Irelands. You'll piece the rest together, part of the jigsaw, the way the game is going.
So when do you think that they could win an All-Ireland? Nobody can say, of course, but would it be in 1 year, 2 years, three, four, five?
I can't see any problem why they can't be winning All-Ireland next year. You know, because these guys, they know what winning is all about. They're young. They're still young. And I think there is no... I mean, with the right approach, the right... You would be expecting to win an All-Ireland next year.
Who was the best footballer you ever saw?
Well, I was probably very fortunate to have grown up and played. I was a very average footballer, but happened to come along midstream with some of... probably the best footballers that ever played. And it's very, very difficult to compare footballers from different generations. But, I mean, when I was growing up, I suppose Mick O'Connell would have been everybody's ideal footballer. He had class. Then, I suppose, Jacko would have been up. I suppose Jacko as an all-rounder. For 3 or 4 years, he was Footballer of the Year. I mean, I don't think there's any footballer that has ever done that. But he was, while I was playing, probably the player that I thought had everything. Mm-hmm. He had leadership, he had stamina, he had strength, he had confidence, and he dominated games. I mean, I don't want to be mentioning names because... every one of those lads were brilliant. But I suppose Jacko would have been very, very hard to beat.
How important, Mick, is tradition and history in Kerry? How important is it for us to remember the people who have gone before us? Or how important is it to talk about old players and old footballers? Does it play a big part in the tradition of Kerry?
It is Kerry. And the more it goes on, the more important it becomes. I mean, you have the classic joke that with the Kerry man, the Kerry footballer with the inferiority complex, he felt that those from every other country were just, or county were just as good as him. And I think there's an awful lot in that. I remember when I put on the jersey the first day, I felt I was putting on a coat of armour of invincibility. And I was going to college in London at the time, and there was a brother of Liam Mulvihill's, Sean, used to play with Longford at the time, and he would have been far superior footballer to me. But he couldn't understand how we were winning under 21 All-Irelands, and he was winning nothing. And he says to me one evening, he says, you know, the problem with you, Kerry lads, you're so England, he says, you think that you're better than everybody else. And I think that's, we do believe, once you put on the Kerry jersey, that you are better than everyone because of the tradition, because of you aspire, you accept that once you win or get on the jersey, you will win the All-Ireland. Whereas if you're playing with Limerick, you're not, you're the expectation isn't there.
Like Kilkenny in the hurling. Yeah. When did you play your first competitive ever game of football? At what age?
I can't remember.
Roughly.
I suppose when I was roughly about 7 or 8.
7 or 8. What year was that, roughly?
I suppose 1960.
Now, you're involved competitively since 1960 in football, right up to 2010. Yeah. What now from McKinney? Have you been approached by any other counties yet? You will get approaches from any other counties. From other counties, there's no doubt at all about that. Your record speaks for itself. What will you do?
Well, I have been approached in the last week by two counties, but I wouldn't be interested. I devoted my last 5 years to Limerick, and it was a very satisfying experience. At the moment, I'll just take a break. And if, you know, I will always be involved in football. I don't know where or when, but it's probably unlikely to be outside, probably in Kerry or, you know, but I don't know what the future holds. I'll just take a break from it at the moment.
How many in the family, Mick? Who are they?
I have two sons. Brian, he works as an architect in London. And Eamon, lives in Dublin. He runs a graphic design company. And my wife, Marion. That's it.
Well, Mick, listen to me, as always, it was great talking to you. The last time we spoke was, we were interviewed for our DVD that's coming out very shortly, Secrets of Kerry, A Captain's Story. You'll be starring in that. It's a 4-hour DVD that's coming out, and of course, you'll be unique because you'll be talking with Pat Spillane, who accepted the cup for you in 75, and that's a great story. That'll be one of the highlights of Secrets of Kerry, A Captain's Story. Wherever life takes you, Mick, I have no doubt you're going to be back, because I know by talking to you that you haven't achieved what you want to achieve yet. So come here. Listen, thanks for talking to Terrace Talk, and keep up the great work.
Pleasure, Ravishi. Pleasure.